Your name, please.
My name is Carl B. Stokes.
And your occupation and position?
I'm mayor of the city of Cleveland and have been for the past 2 years.
Mayor Stokes, do you ever think that there will be a day when the color of a man's skin is no more important than the color of his eyes?
Well, my viewpoint on that is that probably the discrimination against a man on the basis of his color is going to become a thing of the past, but that they will then pick up something else on which they'll discriminate, like perhaps the color of his eyes. But I have no question in my mind but that discrimination on the basis of color will become a thing of the past in the United States, and probably at a time sooner than many people would tend to believe.
This is Viewpoint, a series of unrehearsed and personal interviews with people from all walks of life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest is the Honorable Carl B. Stokes, Mayor of Cleveland, Ohio. Here is today's moderator of the award-winning series Viewpoint, the Reverend Robert Libby. Mr. Libby.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Mayor Stokes. You told us you're Mayor of Cleveland, but would you tell us what the Mayor of Cleveland is supposed to do? What is your job, sir?
Well, his primary responsibility, his first responsibility, is conservator of the peace. And in carrying out that, he has a wide range of functions, primarily as being the executive of a big city, which has a myriad of interests, multitudinous problems, many different people, and the responsibilities today of being a mayor are much different from those of 2 decades ago, when all you worried about was getting snow off the streets or sweeping streets. Today you have to worry about finding people jobs, of building housing, of handling the problems of congestion of the big cities, of trying to cope now with the many, many years of neglect that led to the pollution of the rivers and the streams that surround the city, of the air pollution that has now become have such a deleterious effect upon the lives and health of people. These are the kinds of functions, meanwhile, of trying to find some way to finance all of these things.
Mayor Stokes, these are the problems. How much power does the mayor's office in Cleveland actually have to cope with these?
Well, if you took a standard of, say, 100%, I'd have to say that the mayor has about 65% of the authority and the power to do. Or I should say he has the authority. I'm not sure that power necessarily follows authority. The other 35% being shared by city council. But the basic fundamental that the mayor runs into, regardless of the fact that he has the authority, is whether or not he has the resources. And that, of course, is the big problem in this and any other big city.
And what's the problem? Is the tax base of the city drying up? Where are you getting the money to begin the reconstruction of Cleveland?
Well, it's a combination of things. The dwindling of the tax base, the fact that the federal government has preempted a majority of the tax sources, the failure of assistance on the part of the state, the fact that many of your economically productive people have moved from the city, followed by the businesses and industries, which thereby has left you with a more economically dependent person who, while the same time that your tax resources are dwindling, is more dependent upon government than those who formerly occupied the city prior to him.
How are you trying to cope with these problems?
Well, you try to stabilize your community. You try to retain all of the industry and business you have. as well as to attract new industry and business. And then you fight with state government to get them to be more responsive to urban problems. And lastly, although probably first, you beat the well-beaten path to Washington to try to fight for additional federal funds.
Has this been able to stop, for instance, the flow of the middle class out of the city into the suburb?
That's become pretty well stabilized in the city of Cleveland, but we've lost about 65,000 people over the last 10 years. In one way, the economics of moving to the suburbs has begun to lend its own influence in stopping the exodus, because the tight money market, people just aren't able to go into the suburbs and buy the housing there. But more than that, I think, has been some effect on the fear element, which has been one of the things driving white persons from the city.
Are people afraid to live in the center of your city? I noticed two things about Cleveland when I came in the other night. One was your streets are very clean. And secondly, that practically all your downtown movie houses are closed up. And there's no life downtown in the evening. And well, is this due to fear, or what is this due to?
Well, first, there's never been much life downtown Cleveland. We're a sort of conservative city. We've never had a real nightclub section. It's been much more active and lively than it is now. But with the development and building up of the suburban areas, with the shopping centers and with the theaters moving out there where the greater bulk of people are, this and thereby making it unnecessary for people to come downtown to shop, and with no great restaurants downtown, the suburban areas have managed to retain their people after dark. And as a consequence, the sheer lack of patronage has caused our theater, what theater section we had, to atrophy.
Mm-hmm.
But Cleveland never was a nightlife city. Now, I would have to say that in addition to that is a fear element. Coming into the city in the nighttime, Cleveland has seen its own share of the increase in crime, like other cities. And although a person may never have been assaulted or never know anyone personally who was assaulted, today one of the most pervasive things to fight against is just the fear itself from those who never have actually had anything happen to them, but they're just afraid. And we try to do the things to militate against that.
I understood you said recently on television that a hoodlum is a hoodlum. If he's from Shaker Heights and he's a hoodlum, arrest him. If he's wearing a dashiki and is a hoodlum, arrest him. Has this basically been the attitude of your administration?
It's been if there's one thing I've insisted from the police department is that they're going to enforce the law impartially. And this thing about whether you enforce it against a suburbanite, a wealthy man who happens to be drunk and driving or out on the streets looking for a girl or something, and have the police wink at him, but then go and heavily enforce the law against a young Negro boy, we're not going to have that in this city. We're going to enforce the law against everybody. And because I happen to be black, and there's some black people who are doing wrong out there in the streets, if they're doing wrong, arrest them. They have no kind of immunity or protection because Carl Stokes happens to share the skin color. But don't arrest them just because they're black either,
mm-hmm.
You see. And this is what I've insisted on, and this is what's going to be the standard of conduct in this city.
How do you differentiate that point of view from what is commonly known as law and order, the law and order syndrome or point of view in this country?
Well, because the law and order phrase has become a code word for anti-Negro. And generally speaking, the attitude has been, we want law and order, it means keep the black people down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we aren't going to have that kind of syndrome as part of the mentality of the administration of the city of Cleveland. I admit that it's an appealing thing, and that white persons who wish to respond to a thinly veiled appeal to their prejudices will respond to it, and probably if I pandered it, even I could turn it to my advantage. But I refuse to do that, and I'm not going to permit the police department to respond to it, other, that is, to the extent to which they're able to help some other man replace me. In that case, of course, my responsibilities are over.
Mr. Mayor, how much of the crime problem in our cities is due to the drug problem in our cities?
In Cleveland itself, probably among the big cities, we have less of a problem, because in Ohio, about 12 years ago, we enacted some of the strongest drug laws in the United States. And as a consequence, most of the professionals, the big-time professionals, left the state of Ohio and plied their trade elsewhere. Now, among the young people in Cleveland, we yet have a very bad problem, which probably reflects a very small number of hard narcotic addicts, that is, persons who are using heroin or cocaine. In fact, we number our really hardcore addicts at only about 300.
Oh, really?
And which is very, very small. But we do have a bad problem in the use of other kinds of drugs, barbiturates, I should say, among the young people of our schools. There probably isn't a high school in the city of Cleveland that does not have a problem situation just from the use of these kinds of drugs. And I would include the use of marijuana in this. And it does create a problem. Probably this is the kind of problem that can be cleared up with sufficient public education, as well as an additional number of police that would work on the outlets for these drugs.
Mr. Mayor, when you were elected, you made the statement, "If my election demonstrates the viability of the democratic process, I am proud." What did you mean by that?
Well, it meant that that people took a look at Carl Stokes and realized and recognized that he was a Negro, but that in a democracy, the ideal to be attained is a search for the best qualified person to occupy a public office and to have the responsibilities of the electorate. In my case, reflecting black and white votes from every area of this city, it did demonstrate not only the viability but the efficacy of the democratic system.
What effect has your election had on the black community in Cleveland?
Well, I think it's been important to the black community to demonstrate this viability of the system. There's been a great pessimism over the years about whether or not the system can work, whether the black people of this country are going to be able to follow the paths of the other ethnic minority groups that subsequently were absorbed into the great American way of life. And the fact that in a city two-thirds white, a Carl Stokes got elected attests to their faith in this regard and gives them renewed hope in the system under which they live.
How is the white community responded to having a mayor who is black?
The white community has responded well.
Do you agree with that analysis of the Kerner Report?
Of course I agree.
What forms have white racism taken in your own life, in your own experience?
Well, I don't think it's important about my experience. The important thing is, how does it relate to the to the problems of the cities, and when it's reflected itself in closing out job opportunities, when it has enforced the Negro of this nation having to live within a circumscribed area of the city, which almost always is the poorest, most deteriorated and run-down section of the city. When the white racism has reflected itself in the best teachers not being available in the schools proximate to and within the black community, and when white municipal administrations have failed to respond to the needs and imperatives of the black communities, all of these are the things that have created the tensions and the reactions and that reflect the white racism of this nation.
Tell me something about the Cleveland Now program that you initiated during your first term in office.
It's a great program. It combines the private sector and the public sector in the raising of necessary monies in order to meet many, many problems. This is a 10 to 12 year, $1.5 billion program, the first phase of which was of 18 months duration, envisioned the spending of about $177 million. The greater bulk of that $177 million was coming from the federal government, about $144 million, with about $20 or $22 million coming from state and local government, and then a remaining $11,250,000 to be raised from the private sector, from citizens themselves. And this program has been eminently successful in the last 18 months. They passed all of their goals in such things as the development of new or rehabilitated housing, creation of jobs for the hardcore unemployed, the development of entrepreneurial programs for young blacks, development of new recreational opportunities. It's just been a great program in which not only has the community participated with its dollars in supplementing dollar programs by government, but also it's been the great involvement of people in decision-making and citizen participation in their government.
Has the religious community been involved in this program at all?
Very heavily. The religious community, of course, has been quite heavily involved with me in my office from the time of the campaign. I'm afraid that I just didn't get a great deal of hope or help from the traditional political sources, and I had to turn to the clergy and to appeal to them that in order to make religion real, in order to make their theological approaches to the problems of their parishes and congregations something that approximated something more than just a wish of good things to happen, that they have to come down out of the pulpit and be involved in the realities and the practicalities of the life in which the church was. And they did come out, and they developed clergy committees, and they were probably the single most outstanding source from an organized standpoint in our successful election in 67, and subsequently have accepted different kinds of role-playing and employment in the city of Cleveland itself.
What different kinds of roles do they play?
Well, some of them, for instance, one of the first men we hired as an executive assistant was a minister, a young Baptist minister by the name of Reverend Lamond. And then we got a minister to accept a position on the Zoning Board of Appeals. And then in our recreational programs, we got several of the ministers to accept a regular job-paying roles in those. And then as we developed our citizens groups, and we would have issues before City Council that we needed the support of the community, we turned to the church, and the ministers would rally their people and come down and support us on these issues that were clean-cut community need issues.
Is it true that politics sort of gets in your blood, and once you start running, you just have to stay in?
Well, I don't know, because I'm undergoing a transfusion right now that'll get whatever it is, those impurities out of my blood, I can tell you that. But I can, it's a great life, it's an extraordinarily challenging life, and you're really where the action is. But I would think after this next term of office that I'm going to turn to a man younger than me and give him an opportunity.
I understand you have quite a family. What are the values that you hope to pass on to your own children that have meant something in your life?
Oh, I guess what the thing I'd like to see them do is to have the opportunity to be of service, to make a contribution that isn't related to compensation or to salary, but rather that whatever advantages I'm able to afford them as they grow up and develop, that they'll be able in their own lives to contribute some of it back to the society from which it came to them. The only reason I can feel about retirement from politics in the near future is that there have been some things I've been able to do. There have been some contributions I've been able to make, and that you have to know when you have probably made the maximum of your contributions.
Sir, if the time comes when you do retire from public life, how would you like to be remembered?
I'd like to be remembered in the way in which I just talked, with one exception, that not exception, but one addition. And that is that any mistakes that I made in public life were mistakes made in the process of trying to change things. And they were honest mistakes of judgment. And that they were mistakes from which I then tried to profit and to then do better in the role that I had voluntarily accepted as one trying to work in the public sector and to help people who had not been as fortunate as myself.
Thank you, Mayor Carl B. Stokes, for being our guest here at City Hall in Cleveland, Ohio, and for giving us your viewpoint.
Thank you.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church and presented in cooperation with the National Council of Churches as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest was the Honorable Carl B. Stokes, Mayor of Cleveland, Ohio.